today on CodePen Radio.
Hey, everybody. Time for another CodePen Radio. You know, a couple weeks ago, we talked to Trent and Dave from Paravel Inc. about how they use CodePen. It was kind of a trend that I thought would be fun to talk to more CodePen users and particularly people who use CodePen on lots of different levels and specifically those that use it for client work at least sometimes. So I happen to know that I've worked in very small ways with a fellow named Chris Gannon in that way. And so we have Chris on the show today. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hi, good, thank you. Good morning. Oh, good evening.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's a little of both. Through the power of the internet and time zones, where it's a little bit of both. Morning for me, evening for you, I think, right? You're in the UK. Yeah.
Yes, snowy UK at the moment.
So I would bet a lot of people listening to the show have seen you because you've been a long time CodePen user. And you're one of those users where like everything you post probably hits the front page because you're just, you're a talented fellow. I don't know how well you are at receiving compliments, but I'm going to toss some at you. Kind of a JavaScript animation. Yeah. How would you describe yourself? Why don't you do it instead of me doing it?
Yeah, I describe myself as an interactive designer, animator, and illustrator. And I sort of do all of those in sort of varying degrees, and I try and sort of mix them up so that, if I have an idea for an illustration, I'll think, well, how can I make this more interesting by animating it? And then once I've made an animation, I'll think, oh, how can I make this more interesting by, adding in some kind of user input to make something just a little bit more engaging, a bit more interesting. So it's quite hard to, I do lots of different things. So sometimes I'll be hired for just a pure animation job, or sometimes I'll just be hired for just some illustrative stuff. So, it just keeps interesting. It keeps life interesting,
I think there's always movement involved in your work, but that's not maybe always the case. Sometimes it's just illustrative.
As I sort of, as time goes by, I'm being sort of hired for some illustrative stuff, but it's a very small part of what I do. The personal stuff that I put out, especially on CodePen, publicly, I do a lot of, as you say, stuff for clients, but it's private. I like to be quite free with my illustrative stuff and just do whatever just try and be as creative as possible and just be free because I'm not doing it for anyone else other than me, really.
Yeah. I like to think if somebody brought up any Chris Gannon pen and looked at it without, and it happened to not be animated yet, like you said, it relies on some kind of user input to do its thing, that it would be hard to guess what it's going to do. I don't know if that's always the case. It's not like you're trying to hide it, but there's always some element to it that you're like, ooh, that's what it does? That's great,
Yeah, I love that that element of surprise, and sort of, I'm going to say it, delight. Sorry. I know. I do love that little, that moment that you get when you sort of discover something fun or sort of just a little tiny touch or a little detail that it's not there, at the forefront of the project or whatever. It's just in there to be found. And if you find it, then great. But if you don't, then it's not a...
Yeah, it's still effective.
Yeah, exactly. So
the web seems so ripe for it because it's like you go watch, some beautifully done cartoon or something and you almost expect the quality to be high. You're not sitting there thinking, oh, look at the water ripple on this cartoon I'm watching. That's incredible. I mean, maybe animators look at that kind of thing, but for the most of us, we're just like, this was really well done. But somehow on the web, if you see something like water rippling, you're like, wow, that is so unusual.
I think even still now, those kinds of things are, as somebody who does what I do, I think you have to maintain that level of wonder and excitement about things because lots of things have been done and they've been done many, many times, but people keep doing them in different ways, and exciting new ways. And, people do water ripples and all sorts, 101 different ways. And I'm excited by pretty much all of them. So it's a very healthy way to conduct your sort of professional and life and also your personal work just by being enthusiastic and delighted by the simplest things, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a very nice sentiment. I like that. So speaking of watery stuff, maybe we could, you know, I think Marie noted you have some probably every year, but, you know, in the early part of the year, we published the top 100 and, you know, you're always.
I didn't do very well this year.
Oh, you did fine.
Well, you know, this last year specifically, my sort of work engagement has suddenly rocketed. And I'm just, which is good. I'm not complaining
that's good
at all,
news.
But it has meant that I haven't had the time to spend, you know, just mucking around as much as I would like.
And yeah. So there's plenty of stuff that you work on that just really never sees. It just can't go on CodePen. It's not appropriate for it to be there. It was for a client. So that's that, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of, I mean, most of the time now when prospective clients or even existing clients come to me and they sort of say, well, how, you know, what's your workflow? CodePen is central to the way, and I'm not just saying that because I'm, on CodePen Radio. It is central to the way that I create previews. I can do live edits with clients. I can, you know, fork stuff, copy it, leave those copies for them to see so they can see a progression. So, you know, I can create collections for them to look at different versions of things. You know, CodePen is central to the way that I
Even if it ends up being private, is that true? Like it's just that it's just a private pen and it just stays private forever.
Yeah, I've got probably tens, if not hundreds, of private collections for clients that never see the light of day because of NDAs or because it's just they don't mean anything to anyone. You know, they need to be in a specific context, or I did them for a client and I didn't really like them. I didn't really like the work that I did, not the client, but you know, or I kind of think it doesn't really fit with my.
And you know that you do you kind of explain to clients up front, like, look, I'm gonna send you to this URL that kind of looks like it's public, but it's not. Don't worry about it. Kind of, it seemed like from Trent and Dave, they didn't have too much trouble with that, but maybe it's a little like expectation setting up front wasn't a bad idea. You know, you'd hate to have a client think, oh my gosh, what are you doing? You're sharing this publicly.
Yeah, no, I think, in fact, I think you and I had this conversation. I was talking to you about this maybe a year or longer ago about, I had a quite a high profile client who was asking about the sort of, you know, how easy is it to access these private pens? And you and I had a chat about it. I think his fears were allayed by the fact that it's just a massive string. Unless you're very, very clever and you can guess, you're never going to find it. So, I don't have that that problem. It's not a thing now.
That's good. It makes I worry about it as a, you know, like, are we meeting the needs of people who do client work on CodePen? And then so far, people have said, yeah, it's fine. You know, not that there isn't things to do. In fact, when I, you know, it was a very small project that we worked on together. I had this idea for a feature on CodePen and was like, listen, this is ripe for an animation. You know, we should get Chris to do it. He's so good. I'll let you know that that's still under development.
I was going to say that's a long production cycle on that one.
Well, yeah, you know, that's why we try not to tell the world what we're working on too often, because it's, you know, we don't want to disappoint people when things like this happen. And it's still on our mind. And I'm optimistic that it's going to happen one of these days. But, you know, I hate to do that publicly on the radio. But sorry, people, I'm going to keep you in the dark again. But it involved, it was so fun to work with Chris to see not only it was educational for us. I still have the work. I still intend to use it. It's really cool. But I got to see how somebody like Chris works with clients, because we were the client in that way. In, you know, the way that you worked, at least at the time, was, well, you know, my brain is full of ideas, so I'm going to give you, you know, six of them. And who, I don't even know what you were thinking of before I even saw the first six, you know?
Yeah. Oh God, I gave you loads, didn't I? Yeah. I think I was trying to impress. that's what happens at new clients. You see, come along. I'm like, Oh, look at all these ideas I've got. Oh, I'm bold. My head blows off.
Yeah. But it was kind of cool because it was like a private collection, I think, so that you can send it to me and I can look at all these things without them necessarily being public to the world of CodePen. Nor do you need to, like, invite me to anything or anything. Like, there's this concept on CodePen that private pens in a private collection are visible in the private collection, which is a little like counterintuitive. Normally, if you add a private pen to a collection, you can't see it because it's like it's private. So we're hiding it on purpose. But that combination of privacy allows those pens to be visible.
Oh, do you know what? I never even thought of that. I actually just assumed that because I'd shared a private collection, they could all see that they can. They can. See all that. Yeah.
They can see everything.
That's the idea. But if you if you shared a private pen in a public collection, they would be hidden.
Yeah, no, it's honestly super useful, and it's you know, I have burgeoning collections now for clients that, you know, I just keep plopping, you know, new versions of things, even if it's different projects. They like to sort of see. They like just having one URL that they can go to, and then they can just, you know, and the latest one just gets added to the collection. So, you know, they've got a constant stream of all the work that I've ever done for them, you know.
And then it was hard to pick, but I think we're like, well, how about this one, you know, if I have to pick, and then you can kind of refine it and then, you know.
Yeah, and even do live. You know, I've done some live edits with clients where they just sit there and looking at it in a live mode.
That's great.
Yeah, and that's again, you know, the whole sort of SVG thing. I mean, I know live refreshes it, whatever you're using, but I particularly like the whole SVG thing with CodePen, just because, you know, you're making changes there and then to colors and shapes and all that sort of thing, and it's just immediately fed back to you. It's great.
This episode of CodePen Radio is brought to you by WordPress.com. I bet a lot of you know the difference between the two WordPresses. Kind of. There's WordPress.org, the self-install open source version of WordPress, which is just wonderful. I've been using it forever. The CodePen blog is hosted with it and all that. Bring your own hosting, though, kind of. WordPress.com is that. It is still WordPress. It's just it's hosted and it's just fully managed for you. It's just a heck of a lot easier to get started with. Between the two of them, WordPress powers like a third of the internet, which is just incredible. You know, it just goes to show how powerful and long-living and flexible and just there for the people WordPress is. So this is one thing I've learned after, like, you know, most of my life being in the world of web design and development, is kind of evaluating what you want to DIY and what you don't, with a heavy leaning towards stuff that you don't. You don't build everything from scratch these days. We're leaning on a million shoulders already, and I just think that's the smart thing to do. Like, if you can outsource it, do outsource it. And that's my big message, I think, for the world, for WordPress.com. It really boils down to, like, if you can host it on WordPress.com, you should host it on WordPress.com. All these sites out there that I really wish were just there so that they weren't dealing with hosting and domains and SSL and all the pain that can come with that. There's nothing wrong with knowing that stuff and managing it yourself if you should and whatnot. But if it's like, you know, your bakery website or this conference website, or you're selling scarves online, or there's just a million like types of websites, your travel journal, your personal site, you just want a blog, you know, just like get it on WordPress.com where it's going to be safe. You're going to have still tons of control and tons of power. It's going to be super fast. All this stuff is taken care of for you. Please do that when you can, so that you don't, it's not abandoned. It's not causing you headaches and pain and incredible technical debt and all that stuff. Just use WordPress. It's an incredible platform. You have tons of power there still, and only like graduate beyond that and do more custom DIY stuff if you have to. Anyway, WordPress is awesome. Check out WordPress.com. This is an aside that was only relatable to this project, I think. But one of the things I liked the most, which I think the whole world to steal all your secrets or anything, but what was nice is that you delivered, because your things are so interactive and they're so like, you know, there's stuff that you drag or click or move or turn or whatnot, that you kind of think like API driven with them. And for the one that you worked on for us, it was kind of like, do you want it to do this thing? Well, then call this API as part of this illustration and it will do it. Or do you want it to do this part of the animation? Call this API and it will do it.
Yeah, and I think that's a sort of a something that I've developed over time. I tend to create, I call them animation objects, and they're, you know, they're just JavaScript objects that have public methods that I think the client will need. And usually they're no more complex than, you know, play, pause, whatever. But sometimes they're a bit more than that. You can pass things in if they want to change colors of things, if they want to change the speed. I'll make a speed method available to them. And it's just this sort of this object that I've refined over, and I'm still refining every time I do a project for a client. I kind of think, I'll do that. I often deal with clients that are, you know, they're not technical. They need something that's very, very simple to use. And so I just create these very, very sort of simple ways of interacting with something that essentially can be quite daunting to them in JavaScript, where you just say, look, you just, you know, call this, pass a color in, and it'll do what you want. So
I wonder if, it's such a great way to work, because it really opens up your mind when you have this deliverable. You'll be like, oh gosh, this is going to be so easy to use now. Look, it's not like I have to dissect all of Chris's code and re-implement it into our site in a way. You do this to some degree. I wonder if, I don't know, now I'm just, my mind is reeling. I'm like, gosh, do clients ever ask for like React components or web components or something? So that it truly is just paste the code in.
I've done lots of different kinds of React components for clients, and it's something that I'm sort of doing more of as time goes by, because that kind of declarative state driven programming is becoming more favorable, although it's not, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really lend itself to animation that much, because animation is not necessarily the kind of animation that I like to do. Is not state driven. It's very fluid. It's not just on or off or this or that. It's, you know, all the things that happen in between are important as well. So I'm still sort of getting my head around how to get state driven, you know, to fit the kind of stuff I like to do into this a stateful environment like React, you know, in a nice way, you know.
You do client work like entirely. That's your job on Earth, you know.
My job, right? On Earth is I have other things. I do other things. I spend a lot of time, you know, doing, because, you know, I may be speaking for other people. I certainly speak for myself, but, you know, we're lucky if we enjoy what we do. And, you know, if I'm at a loose end, which, you know, being a dad and all the other things, you know, I'm very rarely at a loose end. But, you know, if I have, a bit of time on my hands, I'm quite often in front of my machine just, you know, thinking up ideas for sort of new toggles. Usually they involve eggs or space or something like that, or liquid. I end up being able to sell the thing that I've made, or it becomes
really
something.
So even if you dream up a crazy egg toggle, somebody will buy it.
I've made quite a few things that people will have, just, you know, and I put them on my site, and people buy them. Yeah, so I mean, it's not a huge market, but I kind of figured you might as well put them up there and see if anyone wants to buy them as not. So but yeah, I it's just nice to be able to do what you love doing and get paid for it. You know, I'm very lucky in that respect. But it's taken a long time to get here. You know, I think
I'm sure, right? If you have this idea overnight that you want to sell little animated products, I mean, that's great, but it probably requires years of getting good at it and getting fast at it and getting sales.
Speed, I think, is the key. You know, you just need to be able to sort of and I think that, you know, I practice a lot, and I practice on CodePen. You know, I've set up a lot of templates on CodePen. So here's the thing. So I used to do music years ago, and I used to have this, you know, a big studio full of like keyboards, old analog synths and all this sort of stuff. And every time I had a kind of a creative spark or a creative idea, I'd go into my studio and, you know, pretty much guaranteed something would go wrong. Like a lead wouldn't be working, or one of the synths wouldn't be working, or, you know, I'd end up on my hands and knees for half an hour trying to something, you know, pressing a key above my head, you know, on a keyboard, trying to get it to, you know, sound to come out. This is going somewhere, by the way. And you know, by then the sort of creative spark has gone. So where I am now is on CodePen, I can set up these templates, where I've got an environment, you know, I've got a whole load of like GreenSock timelines all set up. I've got all my GreenSock libraries all loaded in already. And so I'll just pull up a template and I'm away. I can just start animating immediately. And, you know, it's very liberating to be able to sort of ride that creative wave and get it done and get it down there and then without being sort of bogged down with.
Because it's partially the template, right? Like that's nice to that all this boilerplate work is out of the way. But the other probably more important half is knowing how to use your own template. Because you've done it enough times that you know exactly what's there. You know what APIs are available. Your fingers can just start working. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily work for, I can't take your template and be as productive with it as you are. You know, templates are kind of a personal thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm also aware that the kind of because a lot of the stuff that I put out is public, it's for other people to look at and other people to learn from. And I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not the greatest JavaScript programmer, but I try to code in a very consistent way and a very simple way. Because I think people are going to be looking at it. And I think if you look at any of my pens, you could put two of my pens next to each other and they almost guaranteed will have the same structure. And then you can get another 10 more and they'll all look almost exactly the same. And I think it's a nice way for less experienced coders and designers to be able to pick stuff up and say, oh, how does that work? And, you know, and then maybe have a look at something else that I've done and be comfortable with the fact that the last thing they looked at was structured in the same way as the thing they're looking at now. So I'm aware that people learn, and you know, and when I learn from other people, it's nice to be able to have a bit of consistency because it's very hard learning something new. You know, it can be quite frightening. So I'm aware that creating a consistency is important for other people as well as, you know, my own productivity. So
you also have a consistent look too. I mean, when I see something, if I opened up one of your pens and couldn't see that it was yours, I would know because I recognize your style. It's very distinct. And I also see that like begin to filter down into other developers on CodePen. You are absolutely very influential to the CodePen community. And I see things that are almost like, I could say this is Chris Gannon's style showing up in pens. And I absolutely see like the legacy of your work going through CodePen. It's really amazing to see.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Well, I look at a lot of pens.
I'm sure you do, yeah.
And it's so, you know, sometimes you sell the stuff, but sometimes you're looking for new clients and all that. I'm kind of wondering, I'm sure CodePen is occasionally successful. I hope it is at having your name be out there and attracting clients to some degree. And I'm sure CodePen isn't your only strategy for that. But if it's a part of it, how big of a part of it is it? And what other apps do you look at for, you know?
Well, I think it depends on, often a prospective client will come to me and they say, hey, we would like something that is very, animation driven, or it's very interactively driven, or it has a certain sort of bent towards one or the other, you know, or, you know, a specific type of discipline. And so I will consider what's the best place to point them first. So I'm on Dribbble. And I'll also do a little bit of research into that prospective client and see the kind of work that they do, and tailor what I send them based on what I think there will be most resonant with them. So often I'll send them a collection of things that I've made that I think I'll actually create a specific collection for them to say, hey, look, this is maybe what you're looking for. Or I'll send them to Dribbble and just, you know, because on Dribbble, you know, you get a whole page full of stuff. And if they're it's a very aesthetic thing and they can just glance down at, you know, a page of 30 different animations and sort of be enthused by that. God, what else do I use? I'm trying.
Haven't you said in the past that you have some like extreme number of views on Giphy?
Hey, I'm about to hit a billion.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's over Christmas I had a bit of a sort of I'll just create a whole load of stickers because I got my head right. I actually was hired by a client to create some stickers, and I was very sort of naive. I just didn't know anything about stickers really, and about sort of how they're used, and you know, and how to make them. And I just, you know, went to town on it. I worked everything out, all the best ways for me to make them, to optimize them, to get them out there and to publicize them and all that sort of thing. So, and then I went sticker crazy over Christmas. I think in November, December, I was averaging about 350 million views a month.
Wow.
The biggest portion of my views, in that sort of near, I'm on about 950 million at the moment.
That's wild.
But November and December were the.
So there's what do you even mean by a sticker? There's a lot of things that use like the Giphy API, right? So they're like, oh, I'm texting with my friend and I want to send them a Christmas tree. There might be some like API involved that pulls like Christmas tree looking stickers or whatever, and then
exactly, and Giphy plugs into iOS and Android and Instagram, and I think that, you know, those three are the main platforms that pull in the stickers that
I almost, because iOS also has this like these like native sticker like packs that you can buy
the packs.
For like a dollar.
Yeah, and and you can choose those, but Giphy's also available, and you know, and I think it's got a wider sort of more varied selection of stuff on there, and they, you know, they have trending stuff, and I was trending quite often on November and December, and obviously when you're trending, you're getting kind of 16 million sort of hits an hour. You know, it's bonkers. You know,
the kind of
numbers. Yeah, so they don't have many analytics actually on Giphy, so I can't actually tell exactly sort of.
You almost can see if on your Giphy profile you evolve, because like early on it looks like they're kind of just like GIFs of animation work you've done. Like you could go to CodePen and just like record a GIF of the screen and just publish it. But more recently, they're all they're transparent.
Yeah, and those are stickers.
Success.
When you put it on a transparent background, that is in Giphy land, that is known as a sticker, and it means that you can overlay it on top of a video, you can overlay it on a photograph or whatever, because obviously if it's got an opaque background like just a normal square, then you can't really do a great deal with it. It's just a square of animation. So and funny, I left all those in there because sometimes, you know, I get a bit embarrassed about sort of the stuff I've done in the past. And I sort of clean up a little bit, but actually with Giphy, I just sort of left everything on there because, it gives people a sort of an overview as to where things have come from and where they're going, for me anyway. And it's interesting for me to see, have a bit of progress, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting how you explore different territory. You mentioned GreenSock a bit, and I know a lot of your pens use that, and you mentioned that in your templates and such. But maybe early on you explore different tooling and stuff. I remember you saying you've looked at, you know, like video animation tools like for that maybe speed up the early ideation process.
In the sort of 90s, I was doing video animation. In After Effects, sort of before I was doing any web stuff, and then Flash came along, and you know, that was my sort of introduction to sort of the web and animation and video on the web. When Body Moving, and which has now become Lottie, sort of arrived, which is a way of exporting your vectors out to the web. You know, I suddenly realized, hey, you know, there's a whole load of new ways now, or old ways, that I can get ideas done really, really quickly, and then stick them on a web page. And again, I've got a template for that on CodePen, which has got the Lottie player in it, so I can literally just create my animation in After Effects, export it as a Lottie JSON file, upload that to CodePen, and then just copy that URL of the JSON into my template, and it'll immediately play it. And in fact, that's what I did when you hired me for that project. You know, I created quite a few of them in After Effects just so I could just burn through. I had a load of ideas, so I just wanted to burn through them. And I just found in that specific instance, After Effects was the perfect kind of vehicle for
that.
That's
nice for that. When you're able to find tooling that is just as faster, even if it's not the final product. That's kind of cool, I'm sure. Because you're drawing upon past experiences.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you decided on which one you'd like, that was when I decided, you know, create this properly in using JavaScript and GreenSock and whatever. So, but it was just good to, I said, burn through ideas. And
it's interesting with your music past that it seems like, at least publicly on CodePen anyway, I haven't done a lot of like web audio API or tried to bring sound into these animations in a way. Do you think about it ever?
I made a vinyl record player on CodePen, which if you search my pens, you'll find it. And you can.
I remember that one.
Do you remember that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was using the SoundCloud API, and you could pick up the vinyl, the head, and you can drop it on the disc, and it'll play it sort of anywhere on the record. So it was more of a test. You know, these things are, you know, I do this just a little. You know, I want to understand an API, and I want to sort of mix it up with a bit of interaction and a bit of graphics. And I just like pulling in lots of different things and trying them out and seeing how they fit together. And that pen is actually a bit broken now because the SoundCloud API changed. It does sort of work, but some of the events aren't firing now, but it still works. So yeah, I do.
Tried it right now and it worked fine. I typed in Madonna and it just worked.
Oh, did it? Oh, cool. who knew Madonna was on SoundCloud? And I didn't. Who knows?
Madonna is everywhere. Come on.
Yeah, of course. What am I saying? Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much for telling us about how you do your work and your thing. Do you have any kind of final thoughts you'd share with us? I'm happy to take any criticism as well. I like give that opportunity to our guests. What can CodePen do for you?
Do you know what? You've kind of put me on the spot now. I mean, there are something. I think the latest change in the UI is for the better. You know, I was having problems with when I was loading things like my templates, it was taking ages to load. I'd click on it and it would take ages to load. But you've actually changed things now. You've moved to where the templates are, and it's pretty fast. That was my main niggle. I would sit there literally for about 20 seconds waiting for the drop down of templates to arrive. But that problem's gone now. So, but you put me on the spot, and I can't think of anything. I love CodePen, et cetera. So.
Well, the CodePen community loves you. You have given so much to us over the years, and I'm so glad that we were able to have you on the show.
Yeah, finally. Thanks. Yes. Long time coming. No, joking.
Chris was not paid for his appearance here on CodePen Radio. Thank you. Goodbye. Anyway, I'm really appreciate it again, and it's nice to talk to you always, Chris.
Yeah,
and,
you too.
And I hope
Cheers.
To talk to you again soon.
Yeah.
Take care.
Cheers. Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Seven, six, zero, three, one, eight.